been on a war six fights and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking down with life, I'm fighting and fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. And you run down my country, man. You walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on, excuse me, whiteresistanceradio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, a strange story out of Vancouver. My good friend Brian Rue, he's a videographer. He's put out more than 2,000 videos in the past half dozen years. Initially, about 700 were on Buddhism and meditation. But much more recently, I'd say the last 4 years, he has been devoting a lot of effort to historical revisionism, videos on all sorts of subjects. He's interviewed just about everybody who's anybody. He and I have done about 170 videos together. He is incredibly prolific. Anyway, today he and a couple of compatriots went to the University of British Columbia, and there was a protest there put on by a group that seems to have a congenial name. This is the UBC Free Speech Club. That's University of British Columbia Free Speech Club. Okay, so far so good. And what was the protest about? Well, the protest was about what's happening to the student protesters in Hong Kong. They're being brutalized by the Hong Kong police, and there's threats of arrests and further arrests and suppression. And these people are young people, students and others, are demonstrating for more democracy. So, sounds like a good event. And perhaps it was. Now, when Brian showed up, an organizer, this is how he explains it, he said, "Dave and I went to video the UBC demonstration in favor of the people of Hong Kong. And they posted the post below about it. And I'll tell you what this post said. It said, some people have made note that local neo-Nazi Brian Rue attended our recent protests in support of the people of Hong Kong. Now, to be fair here, Brian Rue doesn't identify himself as a neo-Nazi. So that's just the editorializing of apparently the Jewish organizer or spokes thingy for the UBC Free Speech Club. The UBC Free Speech Club has no affiliation with Brian Rue and unequivocally condemns his support for Nazism, white supremacy, and Holocaust denial. These are not the values of our club, and people like Brian Rue are not welcome in our organization. What was that? That was a free speech club. Nobody suggests that Brian Rue has an affiliation with him. He's not a member. He's not a student or faculty. He simply attended protests he organized. And you wonder, why would a free speech club unequivocally condemn Brian Rue's support, alleged support for Nazism, white supremacy, and Holocaust denial? I mean, Brian would certainly quibble on some of those, especially white supremacy. I mean, he's a follower of an Oriental religion, Buddhism. And, you know, white supremacy is basically a smear. White supremacy usually denotes pride in being white, or what we would call white nationalism. White supremacy, literally, I mean, when you get right down to it, well, what does it mean? White supremacy is wanting to dominate or lord it over other nations. I don't know many people who would say, well, you know, I'm a white supremacist, I want to lord it over other people, you know, dominate them. Leave that aside. And the post on the University of British Columbia Free Speech Club Facebook continues, unfortunately, we cannot force people to leave our protests. That being said, we informed Rue when he arrived that we want no affiliation with him. Well, he was there to video it. And that we do not in any way condone his views, and he's not welcome in our organization. We don't want you, even though we're for free speech. Our club, Facebook posting goes on, is dedicated to protecting free speech for all people, especially victims of evil forces like Nazism. What? Now, what was the protest about? Well, the protest was about the way the student protesters in Hong Kong are being treated. Okay, now, I don't know. They may not teach a lot of university these days. I don't know if we should give the poor writer of this a certain amount of slack for being just plain ignorant. What does National Socialism have to do with a protest in Hong Kong? Nothing. This is really mind confusion. And Brian reports further about what happened at the protest. He says that not long after he got there, I just lost that on the screen here, a rabbi came and spoke with the organizer, who was a young Jew holding the Hong Kong flag. They then posted this. You really have to shake your head and wonder sometimes. You really do. At the level of ignorance and confusion, and this is supposedly sometimes even among the good guys. Well, I mean, they say they're in favor of free speech. So that here's another interesting story. Banned in Michigan. So what do you have to do to get banned in Michigan? Truth doesn't matter. Shut down free speech. This is from United West. Uniting Western Civilization for Freedom and Liberty. One team, one fight. Banned in Michigan. This was a 9/11, 9/12 event that was to take place tomorrow and the next day. with Shahram Hadian, how the interfaith movement is sabotaging America and the church, and Jim Simpson, how Islam is destroying America from within. And it's the poster says, a brave pastor planned an event to educate his congregants and the community on the threats of Islam. The event was a two-day, stretch over 2 days, with two excellent speakers. The event was finalized and planned until the media and CARE got involved. Now, CARE is a radical Islamic lobby in Washington, D.C. We all know what happens next. The church froze, the elders submitted, and demanded that the event be canceled out of fear of safety for the church, its attendees and speakers. Fear canceled the event. Instead of digging in and connecting every law enforcement agency to protect them, once again, a church caved into worldly reason and did not take a godly stance against the attack. What was the event? It included two very strong truth-tellers in the counter-jihad fight, Pastor Shahram Hadian and Jim Simpson. What were they presenting? How the interfaith movement is sabotaging America and the church, and how Islam is destroying America from within, respectively. Both speakers were banned from speaking the truth and banned from the church. Why? Because the socialist Marxist Islamists gathered together to shut it down. And the church submitted to the pressure, submitted to Islam, and submitted to the totalitarian system of Sharia. They denied Christian principles, denied Christ-like strength, denied freedom of speech, and denied our founding fathers' liberties provided to us. Go on to say that we'll not let the Marxists and Islamists win. We'll hold our own online event with Pastor Hadian and Jim right here on United West. So you might want to Google that. United West, or the United West, and they're going to have a webinar. The webinar will go on as planned with a little different discussion. Highlights of the two-day event will be presented by both speakers. At least we can stand together across a community and express freedom, liberty, and our God-given rights. So if you're interested in listening to this webinar, email me at paul@paulfromm.com and I'll give you further particulars. What particularly disturbs me about this is as the post says, the cowardice of the churches. But the lack of just basic courage and common sense. We're not sure what threats were made, or maybe just protests to the church, but the church elders completely caved in and collapsed. What would be the proper procedure? Well, Christianity enjoins us to witness to our faith. That means to preach it, to stand up for it. Not to say, oh, we don't want to say anything, somebody might be offended. That has not been the traditional message or approach of Christianity. Christ said to go forth and teach ye all nations. That was what Christians were supposed to do. They were supposed to testify to their faith, that is, to proclaim it. Well, here, an event having to do with faith is canceled and suppressed. And we're not sure, at least from the information I have, I'm not sure that it was because of threats. But if it was because of threats, what should be done? Come on, let's scratch our heads and then give this some thought. Well, of course, contact the police. Lay on some security if necessary. But you don't cancel. And you know, the sad thing is that every time something like this happens, it just makes the forces of devilry stronger. You know, courage is infectious and cowardice is contagious. If the church had simply said, well, we hear what you're saying, and you're right to your point of view, but we want to hear these speakers, that would probably have been the end of it. But retreat is never, never the way to go. Somebody who has been poking at the backside of tyranny for 30 years is my good friend in British Columbia, Gordon Watson. He's as a strong campaigner against abortion. He even went to jail for picketing abortion clinics. You'd say, well, how's that illegal? Well, what they do to protect the snowflakes is that they proclaim bubble zones of perhaps 100 yards around abortuaries. And if you go into those bubble zones with a sign or even a leaflet or even appear to be praying, you can be arrested and sometimes sent to jail. Anyway, Gordon has been quite focused on the whole LGBTQ issue, but more accurately, the transgendered aspect of it, and that's what we have seen a great deal of late. The various pretensions of the transgendered, and. This has been particularly so in British Columbia, and Gordon was strongly with us during the big battle with Ronan and O'Shea, the transgender thingy who went after Bill Watcott. Anyway, this is what he says, and you know, it really does require people to speak up. I report here, free speech activist Gordon Watson speaks about incremental shoving back against the trans insanity. And he writes, I have a mind to drive for Pearson College. Now, Pearson College is an institution of higher education just outside Victoria, which is just around the corner from me in Metchosin. Metchosin's a small town outside of Victoria, British Columbia, on Vancouver Island. It would have been a good gig. But their policy on gender diversity is so bad it's laughable. Insanity writ large. And this is a letter he sent today to the college. Pearson College, attention, your various people there, from Gordon Watson. This is my notice that I hereby withdraw my application to be an on-call driver for the college. Having read the documents delivered by surface mail, it is clear that my own position within the so-called trans controversy is antithetical to yours, to your gender diversity policy, to the extent that I am not able to cooperate with such insanity. I am a long-time political activist, lately on the front line of court actions to do with the transgender nonsense being pretext for outlawing freedom of expression. I could submit a few hundred pages explaining why the whole trans thing is a textbook example of mass hysteria. But one quick overview will suffice. Following by regular surface mail will be the essay, Transgender is a Fad Worth Rejecting. I recommend that the college make, quote, Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, that's a book, by Charles McKay, required reading for all concerned. It's the classic work explaining how human beings go crazy in herds, then regain common sense one person at a time. As King Solomon said, this too shall pass. Meanwhile, the college better pay attention to the lawsuits now underway in which parents of children who suffer at the hands of quacks in the transgender racket are suing those practitioners and also the institutions which enable medical malpractice. As I write this, a lawsuit is being prepared by parents of children who are in care of the British Columbia Children's Hospital with that cause of action. Being in the place of a parent for its students, Pearson College has the duty to inform thyself as to all of the readily available information on this topic before presuming the science is settled. It most certainly is not. In light of expert opinion, on the harms done to individuals who once did present as transgender, then regain their sanity, the college ought to get professional legal advice recounseling an indictable offense that is criminal negligence. So Gordon has basically said, I'm not interested in applying for the job as long as you have this insane statement about transgenderism. I won't work for them. I wouldn't even consider working for you. Well, that, in this day when employment is scarce, this takes some courage. But this is what I believe, and I believe traditionally that this has been Christian teaching. The Christians are required to testify or to speak up for what they believe. Here's a weird case. This is weird. Claiming to be Cesus, ex-Cesus, man tries to burn himself. Now, this guy is an Arab from Israel, or so he says. He came to Canada illegally, made a refugee claim, but never pursued it. He said the notices got lost in the mail. Was served with a removal notice, which is a highfalutin talk for a deportation notice, and fought that, and then suddenly last year decided he wanted to fess up and say that for 4 years he'd been an informant for Canadian Security Intelligence Service, or CSIS. Now, there's a lot of here that, quite frankly, I would say stretches credulity, but here goes. Claiming to be ex-CSIS, man tries to burn himself. An Arab-Israeli man fleeing deportation doused himself with gasoline over the weekend outside Halifax, the Halifax office of the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, the spy agency that the man claims he worked for as an undercover operative. The man's immigration lawyer, Lee Cohen, who's notorious as an immigration advocate and lawyer down in Halifax, said police arrived before the man could set himself ablaze. You wonder, what was he doing that he signaled he was going to make himself into a human torch, but then didn't? I mean, wouldn't it be the matter of, a few seconds? You pour gasoline on yourself, pull out a lighter, and light it? Well, anyway, somehow, a secret agent man couldn't even burn himself. quote, he tried to kill himself because he wanted to die in Canada and do so on his terms and not at the hands of others who he was quite sure would torture him before killing him, Cohen said. Now, the man who was asked not to be identified for fear of his safety, all this just cloying secrecy. He can't be identified because of for fear of his safety. What? Someone's going to whack him in Canada? People can say a lot of things when they don't have to actually put their mug behind the statements. The man who asked not to be identified for fear of his safety told the National Post last week that he feared being outed as a spy and being killed or sent back to the Middle East. The Post has not been able to verify his claims of working for CSIS. There's a lot about this that I read the initial story, and then this is the follow-up. If he was deported, he'd be deported back to Israel because he's an Arab citizen of Israel. Now, he allegedly reported on Hamas, and we'll get to that in a minute. Now, the Israeli government is a mortal enemy to Hamas. Are we to believe that he would be deported if he's deported to Israel, his life is in danger? What, from the Israelis? On what the lawyer, Lee Cohen, said he was trying to get the federal government to approve a deferral of the removal order on humanitarian grounds. A CBSAS, Canada Border Services Agency, spokeswoman said Monday she could not comment on specific cases for privacy reasons. Judith Gadbois Saint-Cyr said the agency proceeds with removal only when legal avenues are exhausted, and that if there are medical concerns, officials will consult with doctors to provide a person's fitness for travel, to determine a person's fitness for travel. Once again, government agencies won't tell you anything for privacy reasons. Well, wait a sec. He's apparently not legally in the country. He's on the way to being deported. How does he have a privacy right? Well, it really, what it is not so much his privacy, but keeping the Canadian public in the dark. The man had told the National Post he arrived in Canada in 2008 and filed a refugee claim in Toronto. Because he was bouncing from home to home, he said, he did not receive notice of a hearing for his claim, and the claim was abandoned. See, quite often what happens is these people will come here as phony refugees and simply not pursue their claim and try to blend into society. Well, it didn't work that well for him, because a few years later, after moving to Halifax, the man applied for a pre-removal risk assessment, but the application was rejected. See, when he was told he was being deported, he can then ask for what's called a risk assessment, whereby the government has to look at whether he would be in danger of, you know, being murdered or whatever when he returned to Israel. And they found against him, they found he would not be in danger. That's when he approached CSIS, that's Canada's spy agency, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, and told them he had valuable information to share about people in Canada with ties to Hezbollah. He said, the man said that they reached an agreement whereby he would help the agency with its intelligence gathering efforts, and in return, the agency would support his bid for permanent resident status. At some point, he was also being given $2,000 a month as a spy. The man said that over the next 4 years, he helped collect information on suspected money laundering networks and people suspected of having ties to various terrorist organizations. He said he created 3 Twitter accounts in which he pretended to be an ISIL sympathizer. That's the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant. In 2016, the man said, the agency abruptly cut off its relationship with him. Then this summer, he got notice that the government was moving to deport him. People familiar with spycraft say that it would be highly unlikely that CSIS would just suddenly drop him if he was an informant acting on instruction, trying to pin down money laundering and the activities of dodgy individuals with ties to terrorism. If he is a reliable source, why would they suddenly drop him? So the story, of course, generates a lot of question marks, and typical of the type of reporting to which we're subjected. We don't get a whole lot of information. Here's our former prime minister. She's a nasty baggage. Kim Campbell, she was a prime minister. She was the shortest-lived prime minister in Canadian history. I think she was prime minister for, I believe, if memory serves, about 4 months. Anyway, she's a nasty lefty. She's either married to or her boyfriend was a Jew. When she was Canadian Consul General in Los Angeles, and that's a cushy a patronage appointment that was given to her as as being a former prime minister. It was given to her by a liberal government. She ostentatiously hung a mezuzah from her door, you know, where you might have a Christmas wreath or, you know, welcome or something like that. She hung this Jewish symbol. Anyway, that kind of gives you an idea of her mindset. Kim Campbell, Canada's first and only female prime minister, has apologized after she came under fire for tweeting that she hopes Hurricane Dorian, a monster storm that was heading for Florida and, of course, devastated the Bahamas, will hit Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort, which was in Florida. I'm rooting for a direct hit on Mar-a-Lago, Campbell tweeted a little over a week ago. Campbell, who was prime minister from June to November in 1993, has been a frequent critic of Donald Trump on Twitter and often tweets about climate change. So she's drunk the climate change Kool-Aid. And no, I don't wish anyone anywhere the horror of being hit by a Category 4 hurricane, but not everyone can have the protection of a fortress like Mar-a-Lago, built to be hurricane-proof, she wrote in another tweet. Trump will not bear the cost of his immoral addiction to climate challenge. Well, this just shows how wacky Kim Campbell is. Yeah, her initial tweet clearly meant, she hoped, Donald Trump's resort in Mar-a-Lago, Florida, would be devastated by the hurricane Dorian. She, you know, when people began to criticize that, she backed off a little bit, but she doesn't sound exactly sorry. And then we get to maybe the nub of her, part of her outrage with Donald Trump. Trump will not bear the cost of his immoral addiction to the climate challenge. Now, she seems to be saying that the hurricane is caused by man-made climate change. No serious person, and I mean no serious climatologist, would argue that. There is no connection between the hurricane and man. Man doesn't cause climate change. And I guess if you follow the argument, if human activities are causing climate change in a negative way, there ought to be more hurricanes. Although actually, that's not the evidence. There do not appear to be more hurricanes right now than there were, let's say, a decade or two or three or four or five ago. So this comment, well, he's opposed to linking climate change with human endeavor. Well, he doesn't have to pay the price of his of these views, nor should he. The tweet received attention from the president's son, Eric Trump, who wrote, "Our family is rooting for the safety of millions of homes, businesses, and families, and wonderful people in the great states of Florida." Maxime Bernier, the leader of the People's Party, tweeted, "This woman is a disgrace," and I completely agree. She's a bitter has-been, and her ravings do very little credit to her or to the high office she once held. Back on the topic of the insanity of the transgendered industry. Father's behavior toward trans child is violent, the court heard. Now, when you read the headline, or you read that statement, what pops into your mind? Father's behavior toward trans child is violent, the court heard. I think the normal reading of that would be that the father somehow perhaps beats the transgendered misguided child, but that's not the fact. A father who opposes his transgender child's pursuit of testosterone therapy. So the child's a girl who thinks he wants to be a boy. The father opposes the testosterone treatment, showed behavior that went beyond mere expressions of disapproval, but where it was coercive and intimidating, and thus was a clear act of family violence, BC's top court was told last Thursday. Now, what would be a clear case of violence? The father expressing disapproval of the testosterone therapy. Because of that harmful behavior, a lower court was correct to place restrictions on the father's ability to talk about the case, argued the child's lawyer, Barbara Findlay. Now, if you're reading this from the National Post, as I am, you might wonder, did the proofreader mess up here? Because Barbara Findlay, small b, small f, but the proofreader did not mess up. This wacky, huge, leftist feminist lawyer in Vancouver always spells her name with lowercase letters. Quote, for a transgendered person, having the world refuse to accept the gender identity that you say you are is the most profound harm, because it's a denial of your human identity, Findlay said. So not accepting you for your, what's going through your odd imagination is the most profound harm. And you wouldn't be being beaten severely or maimed or crippled. Those be more profound harms. You know the wild emotionalism involved with this whole transgender scene is really amazing. The dad's expression rights end at the point where they harm the child. This is a very bizarre interpretation of free speech. You've got the right to your to express yourself as long as nobody is harmed. That means as long as nobody's feelings are hurt. The arguments were made at the resumption of a three-day BC Court Appeals Court hearing into a complex family dispute that deals with themes of child autonomy, parental rights, and freedom of expression. At the heart of the case is a 14-year-old transgender boy, it's a girl that wants to become a boy, who's identified as a male since 11. She was referred last year by a psychiatrist in the BC Children's Hospital to treat gender dysphoria. The hospital's gender clinic found it was in the child's best interest to proceed with hormone therapy to help her transition from a female body to a male body, and in doing for that proposed treatment, the hospital got the consent of the child and the mother. The father, though, objected. The father went to court to try to block the treatment, but in February, BC Supreme Court Justice Jeremy Bowden ruled that the child was exclusively entitled to consent to treatment. Bowden went on to declare that the child must be referred to using male pronouns, and that any attempt to persuade the child to abandon treatment or references to the child using female pronouns shall be considered to be family violence. Now, this is where the normal meaning of words fly out the window. Violence is something physical. Violence is a slap to the face, a kick to the shins, a smack over the head. Even I'm confused now. Calling the she who wants to be a he, she, that's family violence, said the judge. And that's actually, to cut to the chase, what's being appealed. An outrageous interference in parental rights. Don't forget that the child is 14. and wants body-changing intervention, testosterone treatment. Some of these things cannot be reversed. This is not something superficial, like the child wants to dye its hair pink, or the child wants to have a stud put in its nose, or the child wants to affect grunge clothing. And none of these things may be particularly admirable, but the long-range harm is pretty limited. You know, you can change your hairstyle, you can change your clothes and so on. Some of these changes, though, the testosterone treatment can have long-ranging effects. And essentially, the father was to be cut out of the decision-making. Anyway, we'll probably come back to this case. We haven't heard that in the last of it. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to take my musical break right now, and I'm going to play a few songs by a man who grew up in the shadow of a very famous man. In fact, that's actually a line from one of the songs, referring, of course, to Hank Williams. Hank Williams Jr., of course, the son of Hank Williams Sr., the legend who died at age 29. Hank Jr. was very, very small when his father died, and Hank, in his early years, would often be sing, and would of course be urged to play some of his father's songs, and he liked that. But you know, as he grew up, he wanted to move beyond that, and he did, and developed his own country rock. And this is Hank Williams Jr. and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on White Resistance Radio. .com.
My cigarettes and all my Thank you.
get drunk and get loud.
St. Williams Jr., this is Paul Fromm back for the game tomorrow night. Same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.